RSN Summer Breakfast Club with Nick Quinn and Glenn McFarlane.
Interesting is a word I'd use to describe Dean Lester, but brilliant is probably a more accurate word. And Dino, as I welcome you to the show today, I don't think you comprehend the impact you have on Glenn McFarlane. He goes a little bit starstruck when you're involved, but hopefully he can be a little bit more composed third week into the preparation.
I am. I'm a little bit starstruck myself, Macca, working with you. I've been reading your stuff for 30 years.
It just shows how old I am, Dino. That's a worry, isn't it?
Both of us.
Dino, he's been a great host this week, though, Macca. He's building confidence ahead of the most important part of the week.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's been very good listening. The boys on holidays better take notice of what's been going on.
I don't think I've got anything to worry about. Now, Dino, as per usual, we're going to turn our attention to racing across the country, racing at Flemington tomorrow, and then we'll take a quick look at two of the Magic Million feature races. The Magic Millions, I don't think I've seen a race day evolve more than Magic Millions. It was almost a bit of gimmicky entertainment during various stages in the 90s. It's now one of the premium race days on the calendar. It's done so very well. What do you make of the evolution? And do you think that some other race days or race clubs could learn some of the things that they've done so effectively?
Oh, well, you get a force like Jerry Harvey behind something that's been so good at retail, and that's what it is. I mean, it's a selling point. And then there needs to be a bonus at the end of that sale. And it's not 5 years interest-free, but it's a $2 million race for a two-year-old or a three-year-old.
Have you got a favourite Magic Millions winner over the journey, Dino?
Oh, Macca, I had a little bit to do with the very first Magic Millions winner, Snippets. Mm. He was prepared down here, and a good friend of mine prepared him up for the Augustine family, and they he went through the sale. And at that stage, the Magic Millions was an unreserved sale, and they weren't happy with the price, so they brought him back, and that qualified him for the race, and he became the inaugural winner. But, yeah, I had a little bit to do with him. He was known as Ken around the stables, and he went on to great heights as a racehorse and as sire.
Sure,
so, I'm right back to 1987 for me.
Well, that's going to be very hard to top in terms of personal highlights. But my personal highlight each and every day is speaking to the TAB Chief Media Officer, Trent Langscale, who has probably forgotten more about the information we're going to talk about than any of us will ever know. Trent, welcome. And Magic Millions, such a big day on the calendar and a race program punters are so keen to get involved with from a couple of weeks out.
Good morning to you, Quinny. As you've talked about, it will be a big day tomorrow on the Gold Coast there for the Magic Millions. We've had the all-in market for the two-year-old Classic and three-year-old Guineas available since early December. It's always interesting to find out where the punters are leaning early, but we've also got the meeting at Flemington tomorrow. A little bit of an earlier finish than last week due to some sun glare issues which were in the last race, but still the twilight start there with the first race just before 1:45 tomorrow afternoon.
Well, we're speaking about Flemington first, then we'll look at the Magic Millions as well. So let's get cracking. Let's take a look at the Flemington races. Races 6 and 9 tomorrow, the first leg, race number 6 on the program. Very competitive betting race. There has been good support for Rule the World, who's now a $4.60 joint favourite with Viral. Dino, how do you suggest we play the first leg of the quaddie?
I'm a bit of a fan of Rule the World, especially when he won at good odds a couple of weeks ago. But I think he's well suited. Again, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the first couple of hundred metres because he missed the start at Caulfield and settled back, and he won very well from the back of the field. I would have thought, though, that typical of the Waterhouse Bot horses, he'd be rolling forward, and I think he's got a very good winning chance again. I'm thinking he's a bit sort of better than this grade going forward, so I think early in the preparation he can win again, but I'd be giving chances to 6 Viral, who is running really well, just drops in weight on his last run and looks as though he gets a better run this time from the draw. 7 Casio, who's not a regular winner by any means, but he's going well in this grade and drops in weight also. 4 Mr. Moneybags at his first run for Lindsay Smith was a good winner at Flemington. He loves Flemington and just needs a bit of galloping room at the right time. And that's the awkward thing from Barrier 3. And Biometric, you can make a case that he should have won the Rule of the World race at Caulfield. He's an import. He's going well. The dry tracks are the key to him. So I think we need all five of those in what looks a really competitive race.
Yes, a couple of Saturdays ago, you tipped Rule the World on top at very big odds and helped punters start the new year in the best possible style. So hopefully can get the job done again. So currently a $4.60 chance, Dean. Do you think that's about right, or do you think that will be popular between now and race day?
Look, I think from the outside draw, that sort of makes it a little bit tricky for him, but the Jamie Carr factor probably makes him very popular. So I think I wouldn't want to take under $4, but I could see him shortening up a little bit.
Dino, just on biometric, you've got it in there for fifth in regard to that. And as you said, a luckless transit at Caulfield. Yet to win in Australia, hasn't won since July 2019. We almost could have won last start, couldn't it? You get the feeling that it's we've got to throw that in, don't you?
Yeah, you do, Macca. He's going well, and all of his runs in Australia have had merit, with probably the exception of a wet track run at the Valley. So I don't think there's anything that suggests that he's not a genuine horse. He just hasn't had the luck go his way, certainly in Australia. And interesting that we expect imports to lengthen out over longer trips, but his winning range is 1400 to 1600 metres. So these are the races that he's got to try and peak at.
So there we go, the joint favourite Rule the World on top for Dino in the first leg of the quaddie. Trini boy, what are the punters doing?
Quinny, with the first leg of the quaddie, as you've touched on, Rule the World and Viral are the equal favourites at $4.60. There has been support for Biometric, opened $11 on Wednesday, now $6. Mr Moneybags is also a $6 hope. Casio at $8. And then to the double figures, where there has been some specking for Skyman from 17 to 11. As you can understand, Quinny has a few selections in that first leg of the quaddie, and it's easy to see why when you've got $4.60 equal favourites.
Well, there we go. Hopefully we get through the first leg of the quaddie unscathed. We move on to the second leg of the quaddie.
Do you want me to give you some numbers, Quinny? Do you want me to give you some numbers or at the end? Do you want me to give you some numbers?
I was going to get that at the end.
Oh, okay, that's okay.
No, we do it race by race.
That's what I thought, Dino. I just want to make him...
Good work, Macca.
Thank you.
Just look at you two teaming up on me after I've joked about how nervous you got around each other. Macca, what are the first the numbers for the first leg of the quaddie, please?
Funny you should say that, Quinny. The numbers are 5, 6, 7, 4 and 2.
Look at you growing in confidence. Almost getting ahead of yourself.
Not at all. There's three to go.
Almost getting ahead of yourself. And after me pumping you up and Maisie pumping you up last week, the coach's clip might be coming. Race number 7, the Kensington Stakes over the 1,000 metres. Now, Dino, they might make an ESPN 30 for 30 documentary about number 2, Prezzato, a horse that won at 20-1 at Flemington in the spring of 2017. Then connections knock back the debt of a small nation, and it looked to be a catastrophic move on the back of that. But since then, the horse has really found form again, loves racing at Flemington. Do you anticipate Prezzato can soften the blow for those connections of not getting sold to Hong Kong with another victory tomorrow?
I think he might. I think the point you make about him winning at Melbourne Cup Day 2017 was 1,000 metres down the straight at Flemington, drawn out, and basically, that's his stock and trade. He's absolutely at his best. 1,000 metres down the straight with a bit of galloping room, and that was the thing he didn't quite have last time. He was drawn closer to the inside. He likes to just sail down the outside, and I think he's a good chance of turning the tables on the likes of Fabergino. I think Pandemic's certainly, whilst probably better at 11 or 1,200 metres, the way this race sets up, he's going to be strong late. He's a legitimate chance. Fabergino actually drops in weight for winning last start with these new, with the different weight scales going back. So she's in, good shape, kept fresh. Down the straight, she runs well. And I'll put Sword of Mercy in, who is another quite remarkable story for the Ellerton Zara stables. She took 12 starts to win a maiden. She's won 5 of her last 8 runs. So she's done a great job, and she's down to 54 kilos here, probably the absolute minimum that Damien Lane wants to ride at the moment, and I think that's a good lead that she's going well, and she should be put in. So they're the four for me. There's interesting runners in this race. Bonzaway resumes from a bleeding attack, usually sprints well fresh, and Helvorsen trialled very well on Monday, but he trialled very fresh, and I just wonder if barrier one down the straight's absolutely ideal for him. So it might be just a watch and see with him, but a really good race for the straight track specialist.
Number 5, Milwaukee, has an excellent record at Flemington. 15 starts for 4 wins and 5 placings. Do you think he's just not going well enough, or do you not like the fact they're dropping back to the 1,000 metres where he's never won?
Well, he's first up. He hasn't raced since July, so he's fresh. But down the straight, he is an 11, 1,200-metre horse. And the two runs at 1,000, whilst competitive, and one of them was behind Prezzato when he ran third, he ran very well. I just want to see him with one run under the belt, get to 1,200, and probably draw out a little bit as well.
Dean, you talked about Hal Vorsen, and we've seen how good he is down the straight, and that is like, what sort of campaign do you think he's looking for? Is Robbie obviously heading him towards, you know, potentially a Group 1 in the autumn?
Yeah, I believe so. I heard him on the radio yesterday, I think it was, speaking with Michael Felgo, talking about running in the Lightning next and then into the Newmarket. So, yeah, he's three runs, including tomorrow, basically revolving around the straight course, and why not? He's had six runs here for 3 wins, and the unplaced runs have basically been when it's been wet ground. So yeah, he's a very effective straight horse.
Trent Fabergino's been an absolute darling for punters, having won 10 from 16. Has the money come for her again tomorrow?
There has been a slight ease, Quinny, for Fabergino. Went up $3.60 on Wednesday, and remains the favourite, now at $3.80. Pandemic opened $4, did get out to as much as $4.40, is back to the original quote of $4. Prezzato, there has been a slight tighten from $6 to $5, Sword of Mercy at $6. There was early support on Wednesday for Hal Vorsen at the $11 mark, currently $7. They're the sprinters in single figures. Then there is a gap to Bonds Away at $15. Even though it is the listed race, Quinny, this actually isn't one of the bigger betting races on the card. Fabergino, the $3.80 favourite. There was that early backing for Hal Vorsen.
Thank you, Trenny Boy. And Prezzato was trimmed up already in the marketplace. Macca, the second leg of the quaddy. What are Dino's numbers, please?
2, 6, 1, and 8.
Almost getting ahead of yourself here. Absolutely love
come
it.
Come on.
The third leg of the quaddy over the 2,000 metres here. Very competitive betting race. Long Arm currently heads the market at 370. How do you suggest we play this race, Dino? Potentially an opportunity for some value?
Yes, there is. I think the horse that's going really well in this race is Influential Girl. I think he can make a really strong case that last week at Flemington, she should have, well, she placed, and I think she could have easily won that race, won by Defibrillate, and we know how well he's going. She goes up a little bit in weight, but this is a slightly easier fare, and she has backed up pretty well in the past, so I just think she's over the odds. I think she'll run really well. The dangers, Takumi was, I think, a really good win on Boxing Day, and that's through the same form line there as Influential Girl, who ran second in that race. So I don't think there's a lot between them. And Takumi was very good there, gets the services of Mark Zara and has just been really consistent in the last few runs. Re-edit, she's had a good preparation. She looks as though she's been looking now for 2,000 metres and gets it. And I think the Wallace stable have worked out with this mare that she really likes her race's space. So the 4 weeks between runs is a bit of a godsend for her. The one I think's hard to assess is Long Arm. He was in the betting to a degree when he made his Australian debut, and it was a good win beating Think and Fly, but it was a very fast-run race, and it's often very hard for horses to go from a fast-run 1,600 to a potentially moderately run 2,000-metre race. So whether he handles that change in tempo, we'll see. He might even be a lot closer to the speed. I'd imagine he'd be in the first three in the run. And the other one, I keep batting up for a Walking Flying. I don't know if this is the right option going to 2,000 metres, but I wouldn't want her bowling me out of the quaddy. She was in the wrong part of the track at Caulfield last week.
Dino, you've left out the one right down the bottom, Cool for Horse, that shot onto the scene winning his first two career starts over in South Australia. Has had multiple runs in Melbourne, has ran well on all of those occasions, but hasn't won a race, sometimes has a couple of quirky racing patterns, and always seems to be very short in the market. What's your little concern with Cool?
Oh, that was just that I was trying to trim it up a little bit. If you wanted to go wider, by all means, he's the one you'd put in. He's had two runs this time in. He's a big, awkward sort of horse, and he's drawn one both times. Hasn't suited him at all. He's drawn a middle gate here. He drops 5 kilos. So, yeah, I can make, and I think he's blinkers first time. So, he's certainly one that will improve. And if you were going one wider, he'd be the one you'd put in.
Dean, you've spent all week trying to work out who's going to win this race, and you've settled on one that I really like, Influential Girl. How concerned were you this morning when you woke up and you opened up the Herald Sun and Nick Quinn has tipped Influential Girl as well?
It's always a setback, but I reckon she's going well enough to carry it.
Let's hope so.
Well, there we go. 2021 will be off to a bang if Dino and I can get Influential Girl home. It'll be Dino and I if the horse wins. If not, unfortunately, Dean's selection was unsuccessful on the back of that. Yeah. Trini Boy, what sort of a quote are we looking at for Influential Girl? Has there been support? And I dare say there will be on the back of that push from Dino.
Well, there has been support, mainly on Dino's thoughts, Quinny, rather than yourselves. Influential Girl is currently a $10 chance. Long Arm has been well supported in this race, though. Open $4.80 and now a $3.70 favourite. Takumi, there's also been admirers there from $7 to $5. With the money for the top two in the market, Re-Edit has drifted from $5.50 to $7. Also, Coolth from $6 to $7. And again, Influential Girl at $10. And then you have Mr. Meter, the best of the others there, at the $10 mark. Long Arm, well supported, $3.70 favourite. Although now there is money that is coming for Influential Girl due to Dino's thoughts.
Dino, what sort of quote do you think she should be?
She's got to be, I think probably $6 or $7, but in an open race. I think that the favourite's a little bit short, and I think there's a few that are a little bit long. I think it's it wouldn't surprise me if it was sort of nearly $4.50 the field come race time.
Macca, what are the quaddy numbers?
Numbers are, third leg, 4, 10, 5, 2, and 7.
Thoughts on his reading of the numbers so far there, Dino?
10 out of 10 so far.
I've got him right for a start the first time, so that's one thing. One to go.
I tell you what, I can't accuse him of not preparing well enough to read out these numbers.
Oh, yeah, I prepared myself beautifully yesterday, didn't I?
Up and about. Now, we're going to take a short break on RSM. When we come back, we'll take a look at the final leg of the Flemington Quaddy, get the all-important formula bet, a Ramaruffy, which has been renamed the Macca Miracle Maker, and Trent Langscale will tell us why he's not called Langscale but Smith when he gets to Flemington. All this coming up. Welcome back to RSN. The text message is coming through thick and fast. If you want to send a question for Dino, 0416 90 50 52. We've already had a request, Dino, for a tip at Moonee Valley tonight. So hopefully you've got one or two you can share with your family through RSN there. And the text messages, they do continue to come through, Macca. And you're smiling, I presume. People are texting through saying what a great job I'm doing, how much they're enjoying listening to me. Is that the theme you're going to run with here?
Is this me from you? No, I just wanted to say you were having a crack at me for getting nervous with Dino, and why wouldn't I? He's a superstar, and we love getting his tips on a Friday. But what about this text as well? I love this one, Dino. You will too. This is Quinny. Aim straight at Quinny. Quinny, you sound like a little schoolgirl. Stop gushing over Dino. See, there you go. It's not just me, Dino.
Yeah, I'd be happier if he didn't do that too, actually.
It's a bit creepy, actually, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it is, really. And no, I'm with the listener there.
Everyone's turning
on me. I just want to be low profile.
Where is that protest siren when we need it? Everyone's turning on me except Trent Langscale, or Trent Smith, as he's known when he goes to Flemington. Trent, why do you have a name change when you go to the most famous track in Australia?
And you want me to still be your friend, Quinny, after this? We'll see what happens. No, all that happened was, this is going back a fair few years with Gary Davies, and yeah, they have the passes, obviously, during the Melbourne Cup Carnival to get around Flemington, and apparently there was some consternation about how to spell my surname, so it was decided that Smith would be far easier to spell than Langscale, and when the card came through, Trent Smith.
I like it.
Simply superb. All right, let's get back on track and look at the final leg of the Flemington Quaddy. A competitive betting race, but I reckon Christmas has come early for the punters that got the $5 on the undefeated mystery shot in early betting. Dino, are you with the undefeated commodity to make it a perfect 6 from 6? And did you get the $5 that somehow was posted?
No, I think he's the one to beat, but I'm not thinking he's over the line by any means. I think his trials have been really good. He's now got to be tested down the straight. I think it'll be a really good race. I didn't like Terbium that much at Caulfield because of Barrier 1. Different scenario here down the straight. I think drawn out a little bit, he can run very well. I think he's the danger. Elberg's a really good straight horse. He's won 1 of 18. That's the worry. Barrier 1 looks bad on paper, but when you look at how the speed map sets up, the horses, you know, directly around him aren't going to really keep him to the inside. So I think Lockie King can probably go wherever he wants with Elberg and be prominent and run a good race. And Marcel from Madrid, I was giving a little chance to first up. He just got too far back, but really hit the line well. And I just think second up, he's got a little chance. But, yeah, Mystery Shot's a really good chance of staying unbeaten, but I don't think it's any great gift at the moment.
How progressive do you think this horse could be?
He's got a good winning habit, and the horses that he's beaten have been competitive since. I think the unbeaten run probably puts a little bit more of a wrap on him than there should be, but I think he's a very nice horse and he's a very good chance of winning tomorrow. But I think he's also been awfully well placed.
Yeah, Dino, I need some relationship advice here. I'm thinking of breaking up. I'm thinking of breaking up with a horse that I've just bat non-stop, Hussay. You haven't got it in your top four there. Can you give me any thoughts on whether I should break up or not?
Well, not on ability. He's a good talent and he's had no luck of late. His seventh run in his first preparation, which stems right back to when he won at Wodonga, I think, in July. So I know he's had little breaks here and there, but it's been a long campaign. I just wonder if who say we're going to see the absolute best of him tomorrow. But down in the weights, I think, you know, just maybe, yeah, a little break, see other people for a little while. But, yeah, I'd still keep him in the phone book, Macca.
Okay, beautiful.
Another horse that might fall into the same bracket, number 11, Impey. Looked like a potential star going bang, bang, bang and winning his first three career starts. Hasn't won since. Was fair behind a fair to remember last time out. What do you make of Impey on the back of a bit of a freshen up?
Yeah, he starts his preparation again, second preparation for Danny O'Brien. He had issues at the end of that spring of 2019, hence he had a long time off. I think a fit and well at his best form Impey of 18 months ago, I'd have been tipping on top in this race. I just actually now want to see him do it again. I'm a huge fan, seat 1A of the fan club of Impey, but I just want to see him actually come back and now do it in this preparation.
Mr. Smith, there's been money for Mystery Shot. How popular has the horse been and anything else attracting money?
About 55% of the support, Quinny, has been for the favourite Mystery Shot. Did not open as the elect on Wednesday, as you've touched on. Open $5 and now at $3.70. Terbium at $4.40. Hussay has just got out there to $5. Alberg at $6. There has been admirers at a price for Ruben Bleu from 11 to 9 and then to the double figures where Impey and Deep Dive are the best of them at 12 and 13 respectively. Mystery Shot though, well supported. Open $5, now $3.70.
Geez, he's read those fluctuations well, hasn't he? Now,
has.
A text message has just come through and I'm not making this up.
Yes,
this has
you
come
are.
Through at 7:23.
You'll make it.
Hi, lads. I woke up late. Could you please repeat the quaddy numbers?
Would this be Daniel
Barry?
Harford? No, not from Barry. From Barry. See, Daniel Harford's very good at that.
That's Harford, his ongoing gag, but this has genuinely come through this morning.
So do you want me to start?
Start from the start. So you're
don't
off a
read
blank
the last
canvas.
Leg. Okay, blank
okay hang on. Here we here, okay.
Got a
drum read roll? The last leg, and then
I'll
we'll go through them
leg,
all again.
Because people will do
so
that.
What's so the last leg?
The last leg, this is leg 4 of the quaddy, is numbers 3, 4, 10, and 8. And then we'll start again. We'll go to the top. This
okay.
is Dino's.
So I want to take a quaddy at Flemington tomorrow,
yep.
Macca.
Yeah, you sure do.
What are Dino's numbers, please?
So Dino's numbers in the first leg, 5, 6, 7, 4, and 2. In the second leg, 2, 6, 1, and 8. And in the third leg, 4, 10, 5, 2, and 7. And in the final leg, coming home with 3, 4, 10, and 8.
Out of 10, Dino?
Oh, spot on. No problems there.
It helps when I get the numbers right finally, Dino.
The Lester McFarlane bromance continues to grow. Let's take a look at the two feature races on the Gold Coast tomorrow. We'll take a look at the two-year-olds first, which is race number 6 on the program. I'll go to Trent first before I go to Dino for a thought or two. Very competitive betting race, Trent. We've had a change of favouritism. Swift Witness now heads the market. What are the punters doing?
Well, that is the favourite there, Quinny, in Swift Witness. Really came in the calculations last Saturday after winning on the Gold Coast, and as it happens to be, 3 of the last 4 winners of the Magic Millions two-year-old classic ran the week before. Swift Witness. After the barrier draw, the outright favourite, $4. She's All Class had been the favourite for a couple of weeks at $4.20. After that, they're pretty much solid in the market. Alpine Edge at $8. Shapiro, one-time favourite at $10. Finance Tycoon will be starting from the outside barrier at $11. And Ranch Hand, the first emergency. There's a few all-in punters hoping that Ranch Hand can sneak in at the $12 mark. Swift Witness, though, is the $4 favourite for tomorrow's Magic Millions two-year-old classic.
Dino, what do you make of the two-year-old race?
I like the one the money's for, Swift Witness. I thought did enough on debut, was well beaten, but did enough but made the good improvement last week. Sense of timing's perfect. Not a bad draw where a few of them have drawn really poorly. No, I'd be very happy to be with Swift Witness. I think Alpine Edge, the local, I think is the danger. I think he's a smart galloper, but no, I'm thinking Swift Witness will be very hard to beat.
Swift Witness there, a $4 market leader. Race number 7 for the 3-year-olds. Isotope, all the rage here, Trini boy.
$2.50, Quinny, and that includes one bet of 10,000 at $2.50 on Isotope. Should be a great battle with Isotope and away game at the $4 mark. Just a touch easy due to the significant bet there on Isotope. Forbidden Love, we saw placed in the tab Empire Rose Stakes on Victoria Derby Day. Is a $5 third elect. Then there is a gap. You have a couple of $14 in Apache Chase and also Got a Kiss, and it's $26 or bigger for the remainder of the field. Isotope, Quinny, the best back runner in any race around Australia tomorrow. Isotope, $2.50 favourite for the Magic Millions 3-year-old guinea.
And she burst onto the scene by winning by 10 lengths on debut, Dino, and hasn't put a foot wrong since. She heads the market here at 250. Are you with Isotope, or do you think she's a little bit vulnerable?
Look, the slightest vulnerability is the 1400, but what I liked last start was settled off the speed. Wouldn't want her to have to do that again with all the traffic around her, like get as far back as she did. But she does meet away game a kilo and a half better for beating her, and I think she's probably going to run the 1400 okay. Away game's going to get a lovely run. It was a great clash they had at Doomben. I think they're the key players. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Isotope. I think Ryan Maloney, who did win this race last year, but taken off him through a positive swab with alligator blood, might get to win it outright this year.
And the rider, Glenn Boss, on the second elect away game has been very bullish the last couple of weeks with some of his comments, like a boxer promoting the fight. Do you take Bossy's thoughts into the equation at all? Do you think that he's great for racing? It makes it interesting to talk about, but it's probably not going to factor into what you make of the race.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't factor in what I think of a race. So, yeah, he is great for racing, and he's got, I think if you back him on away game tomorrow, you know he's got full faith in the horse, and whether that's justified, we'll see it at what's about 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Now, there are text messages coming thick and fast asking if Dino's got a tip at the Valley, if he's got anything at Geelong, if he can make me shut up because I talk like a robot. All those messages
I didn't
coming
send that
through.
One.
You didn't.
Oh, that was me. Sorry.
It does say Dean. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Is there a runner or two you can steer us into anywhere out wide, Dino?
Can't help you at Geelong, Quinny, but I very rarely do this, but I'm going to tip one that I've got a little interest in myself, and that is Delusions in the Last Tonight at Moonee Valley. I think she's going a lot better than the 5-9 next to her name suggests, and I think the Kieran Maher Dave used to stable have found the right race for us, so we're hoping with her in the last tonight, race 8, number 6.
There we go, Delusions. A $5 chance.
That was exactly what Nigel Carmody just texted me in as well. He didn't quite say Delusions, but the same thing by saying I've got no chance of replacing. Rammer's job is safe, so there you go, Dina. I've clearly got Delusions there, haven't I?
So Delusions in the last at the Valley tonight. So there we go. Anyone pot me right now? I did get a tip out of Dino at the Valley, which doesn't happen every week as well. So
like
hopefully that can be successful. Something that is always successful, the formula bet and the Rammer Ruffy or the Macca Miracle Maker. Last week, $4.20 the place for those that stuck with Dino in the lucky last, which was very timely after, personally, I had a very challenging day up until then. So well done, Dino. Who's your contestant this week and who are you playing the formula bet around tomorrow?
It's for Aussie Bowd of Ballarat. For Aussie, we're having a $40 win bet, race 1, number 2, Parlophone. $40 the win, race 5, number 3, Overexposure. and $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 1, number 2, into race 5, number 3. That's Frozzy Bowd of Ballarat.
Now, Trent, the bloke that normally does this totally stuffs it up. He's absolutely hopeless. Can you add some much-needed class? What is the formula bet, Payne?
Winnie, race 1 at number 2, Parlophone, $2.90. Race 5 at number 3, Overexposure, $2.60. The multi comes out to $7.54.
Nice and tasty, that. That's good.
And love the way Trent
pre-multiplier.
Pre-multiplier as well.
Yeah.
Add the 0.02, please, Trenny boy.
We'll go 7.56.
Now, the long shot, the Macca Miracle Maker, the Ramaruffy, whatever we want to call it, it's always popular. Who is the runner on the program, Dino, you think is over the odds?
Well, I know Daniel Harford will be very happy with me because we've mentioned the quaddy races, two different races in the all-up and another different race, and then we're going to race 2. It's not as long a price as last week, but I just think he's over the odds. Race 2, number 5, High and Dry. I thought last week things didn't really go right for him, and straight after the race, Simon Zara said he would have gone better with the claim. Well, this week he's got the claim for the gun, one of the gun young riders in Will Price. So I think he'll run very well High and Dry at each way odds.
What is the each way price currently available, Trent?
The price there, Quinny, $7.50 to win and $2.30 to place for High and Dry. Race 2, number 5 at headquarters tomorrow.
What price do you think High and Dry should be, Dino?
About $5.
Okay, beautiful. Currently $7.50. That will be the best backed runner anywhere across the country in the next 5 minutes. Can absolutely guarantee that. Dino, as always, love chatting to you. Best of luck tomorrow. And for your legion of fans, make sure you tune in to RSN tomorrow from 8 o'clock as you go through each and every race at Flemington.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Quinny. Thank you, Macca.
Good on you, Dino. Thanks, mate.
Good luck with your horse tonight, too. Delusions in the last at the Valley. Trent Langscale, 3, 2, and 1 votes coming your way. We'll speak to you in about 20 minutes' time as you do a tab market update.
No worries. Thank you, Quinny.
Got through that relatively unscathed with not too many clips from Trent and Dean. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue to preview the weekend of racing and turn our attention to sport as well, because it's going to be a big couple of days coming up. Interesting to see what happens. Can't wait to see the Western Bulldogs in 2021. And one of the main men is Jackson McRae, who joins us now. Jackson, thanks for having a chat. And what's it like at this time of year? Is it what we picture? It's just a lot of hard work trying to get yourself as fit as possible. And how do you enjoy this time, and how do you feel physically compared to during the normal season?
G'day, boys. It's always an interesting period. Some boys love this time of the year. I'm probably in the camp where I prefer just to play each week and recover. So, it's just about keeping focused on what's important at this point, is making sure you tick every box you can and set yourself up for a big season.
Jack, in terms of this year, it was a different one. Players at the end of the season, end of last season, didn't get a chance to go overseas or really get much of a break. What did you do yourself?
Mine was pretty quiet as well. Just caught up with friends and family for the most part, and caught up with quite a few of the boys to keep fit and train with them as well, which is good. So, it was a bit of a different off-season, a lot quieter and a lot less expensive as well.
Good point.
Now, personally, you had a tremendous 2020 season. Once again, an All-Australian selection. How did you find it, both physically and mentally, compared to years gone by with the strange setup, the shorter quarters, the uncertainty? Was it a season you enjoyed, or you're pretty happy to see the back of it and get on to 2021, where hopefully normality can be restored?
Oh, yeah, it obviously was an extremely challenging year. And, obviously, ideally don't have to hub again and all that stuff. It was quite challenging, especially on the people with kids and young families as well. I was lucky enough, not at that stage in life yet, so it wasn't too much of a burden from that point of view. But I think it is going to be a year we look back on and just marvel how crazy it was at times. But, it was a very interesting year and definitely had its challenges, which I thought, for a club, for the most part, we did pretty well.
Just in terms of the COVID test, how many COVID tests would you have had in 2020, do you think? And do you envisage that's going to be the same thing? You already would have had a few to get back to training this year as well.
I think we're doing 2 a week, so at least we would have done at least 50 for the season. So they're not the worst things in the world. You got pretty used to it. So it was just something that we had to get used to, and You know, if it meant that we could keep the season going, everyone was for it.
We're talking about being away from your family. You're obviously away from your family back here in Melbourne and that. And obviously you've had to follow the fortunes of your brother, Finn, and at the Pies. How excited are you to see him, be drafted by Collingwood? But also, it's probably tough to ask him to play round one, but wouldn't it be nice to have the McRae versus McRae going head-to-head with the Treloar versus Collingwood headlines?
Yeah, no, it would, obviously. I'd love for him to debut round one. So, you know, as I just touched on with pre-season, I think it's just for him coming in and just, you know, obviously getting to know everyone and starting off really well for him. So that's probably the first advice I gave him was just, you know, worry about, you know, your first few days of training and don't look too far ahead. And it's very exciting for the family. And, just can't wait to see how he goes when games come around.
On draft night, were you holding out hope he ended up at the Bulldogs?
Slight hope. It was obviously a bit complicated with Jamara and made it pretty unlikely given our pick situation. So there was a very, very small chance, but it was just rapt to see him get drafted first and foremost.
Do you see? Tell us about him as a player. We've just had a text in from Luke from Horsham about how you compare with each other as players.
He obviously hasn't played in the last 12 months with, unfortunately, their season not being able to play, but he's a bit similar in the sense he obviously is a midfielder. He's probably a bit classier than I was at that stage of my career, and he's got the ability to kick on both sides of his body as well. And he's a pretty calm and collected player with the footy in hand. So hopefully he can bring those traits to AFL level and hopefully have a great career.
Now, we spoke about great seasons, and you had another one of them last year for the Bulldogs, an absolute ball magnet in the middle. And that Western Bulldogs midfield, it's so great to watch when it's up and running, the way you all link up so well. In the last couple of years, it's been a little bit frustrating, the results from the team perspective, after that brilliant 2016 premiership. I think if someone had said to you there and then you won't win another finals game over the next four seasons, you'd probably would have laughed at them. How desperate are you for the Doggies to get back and be winning finals again in 2021?
Oh, very desperate. I think especially the last two seasons, we've probably started a bit slowly and had to really ramp up in the back half of the year, and it's probably showed by the time we get to finals. Probably haven't played our best performances in those games. So, for us is a very big emphasis on starting the season very well and not having to get to a point where halfway through the year where we have to win 8 or 9 of the last 10 kind of games. So, every game is just as important as the other. So it is important that we start the year off well and, really go into a finals position strong.
Have you found that Bulldog supporters, though, they're still glowing from the 2016 premiership? There hasn't really been any discussion about the fact that you haven't won a finals game since, because you've just made them so happy from that day. I'm sure the players are incredibly driven to get back and have success again. But the fans, they just seem so happy with what they thought would never happen.
It is a bit interesting that way. I guess when you look at, clubs like Hawthorn and, big clubs, they're not satisfied with just one premiership, and from a player's point of view, neither are we. So, it's very important, to me, and I know how special that moment was, and there's a whole group of people at the club who haven't experienced that as well. So, I'm very driven more than ever to get us back to that point.
How do you think you'll balance that midfield? Obviously, Adam Treloar coming in is a huge bonus, and the ability to keep Josh Dunkley at the club. How do you think the club will set up that midfield, which looks absolutely outstanding at the moment?
Yeah, it is. It is. A lot of depth in there, which is really important. It's probably something that we've haven't had for a few years now as well. So, we're all going to have to be a bit more flexible in there to fit us all in. And I think it's just going to be very exciting to see how we all mesh together. It's always been great having Adam down to train with us, and just in a few of the match hymns and stuff. It's just to link up with him has been exciting as well already. So, I think it's going to be really exciting how we all play together and see how it goes.
Yeah, we had a little typo in the Herald Sun the other day where the best 22 and Marcus Bontempelli's name was left out by mistake. It was a little mistake. Let's be honest, Jack, did you guys give him a rib about that he wasn't in the best 22 at the Bulldogs?
I think, normally he's probably first pick, so I think for once it'd be nice to see him not on the team. But, I think one of the boys sent it in and had a bit of a laugh about it. But, I think he's probably pretty safe in the team for now.
He gets the game, doesn't he?
Now, I can't wait to see the big man in action next season for the Doggies, Steph Martin. In my opinion, one of the most underrated ruckmen in the last decade. Maybe a little bit out of sight, out of mind up in Brisbane, but he's now with the Western Bulldogs. How much do you think that will help Tim English? Because we know Tim is so good, but maybe at times doesn't have that physical presence that a Martin can bring.
Yeah, I know personally from, you know, probably the last 5 years, as you touched on, very underrated. Every time we played Brisbane, we'd always say how good of a ruckman Steph is. And obviously he gave such great service to all those Brisbane midfielders over the years. So, we're absolutely rapt to have him in. And, I think he's going to be huge for Timmy in his development as well, and also help him on the field as well. So, it's very exciting. And we've only had a few sessions together, but, it's very exciting to see how him and Tim are going to play together and how he's going to help our midfield as well.
Just in terms of the limited stuff you've seen of Jamara Ugle-Hagan at this stage at training, do you expect him to play round one? I know we're putting too much pressure on him and the like, but he's a rare, unique talent, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. His talent is off the charts, obviously. So, it's obviously, I think the club and all of us aren't putting too much pressure on him and just see what happens and go from there. And obviously, there's a few practice games before and see how he goes if he plays in those. And I think if he's ready to play round one, he'll play. And if not, then I'm undoubtedly sure he'll come at, you know, he'll play many games. So, everyone gets very worked up about round one, but there's still a lot of games after that. And he's going to be a very exciting player for a long time.
When you introduce yourself to someone, do you go with Jack or Jackson? Because all the commentators run with Jackson and Macca's running with Jack.
I used to say I've always been Jack, and I normally get Jackson when I'm in trouble from a parent.
I like it.
I'm happy with Jack.
What about Bevo when he needs to give you a bake?
I'm normally Jacko, so Jacko at the club, Jack everywhere else.
Now, you're in pre-season at the moment, but obviously you've got a little bit more leisure time than the normal season. What do you like to do off the field? Do you like to get the golf clubs out, tune into the cricket or the American sports? What do you enjoy doing in your off time?
Yeah, a bit of that. I've been playing quite a bit of golf lately. Play a lot of PlayStation. Love the NBA. Love the cricket. So, I love all sports pretty much. And, watch a lot of movies. And, pretty quiet kind of guy. I don't go out too much. So I'm pretty happy just chilling out and spending time with family and friends.
Who's your NBA team?
Boston Celtics.
Okay, they could be in for another big season. I think we call you Jackson McRae because it just rolls off the tongue so well.
Whatever works for you, whatever easiest.
Well, let's hope we're calling you getting lots of possessions and lots of Dogs victories in 2021. Thanks very much for having a chat and go well this year.
Thanks, boys. Cheers for having me.
Thanks, Jack.
Now we're going to turn our attention to basketball. And when you think basketball in Australia, personally, I think one man, Brian Gorge, and he's been such a legend since coming to play under Lindsay Gaze at the Melbourne Tigers many moons ago. Brian, thanks for having a chat this morning.
No, thank you.
Now, it's been an eventful career, and it's landed you back in Australia as the Hawks coach for the upcoming season. What led to you making that decision? And it could have been over pretty quickly as well, because a couple of Chinese clubs realised one of the best in the business was out here and tried to get you back.
Well, it's an interesting chain of events. You know, I had no thought process of coming back. I was in China 11 years in the middle of a season, and then as gone on for a long time now, the COVID hit and changed everything. You know, within Thursday, we played a game, and we had 5 days off for Chinese New Year. 3 days later, I was back in Australia. And when I got back in Australia, for that 11-year period, I was involved with the national team in China. It's an 11-month season for me with the training leading into the season. And I hadn't spent much time in Australia. And when I got back, I got an opportunity to do some work with some of the international players in Melbourne during the lockdown. They just asked me to come down and lend a little hand, and that really opened my eyes to how much I enjoyed just Australia coaching. The guys were just great. I could communicate without an interpreter. Then the finals were on and the end of the season, and I'd just seen what Larry had done with the league. And, you know, everything's timing. At that same period of time, one of my closest friends bought the Hawks and gave me a call, and all those emotions were running through me, and I said, you know what? It's time. And I haven't looked back, and I can just say, honestly, I know I'm excited about the game coming up, but this whole process of practicing, meeting these guys, getting back into the day-to-day routine of Australia, the lifestyle in Wollongong. I've just meeting new people, the competition in the preseason, the games are really challenging. The teams are well coached. There's a professionalism around this that's different than when I was in it, you know, years ago. I'm just learning. And at my age, having this opportunity, I just feel blessed.
You're 67 years of age, Brian, but you can tell the enthusiasm you've got in your voice now. Obviously, considered arguably the greatest NBL coach we've had. How do you see the competition now? You spoke about Larry and taking over. And what drives you, and how do you see this competition going to the next level?
I just think he's done. I've always thought when I left, especially going overseas and playing overseas, I just felt like I was in China, been around the Philippines, been in Japan, been through Europe quite a few times. And I just, you know, when I left Australia, you know, you look back at the Lindsay Gaze teams with, you know, Copeland, Bradke, Timmons, you know, Andrew Gaze and Copeland. And I go, there's not much better than that. That's good of basketball under the NBA is you see. And I just thought this competition was underrated. But my dad used to say, he'd come out, he was a college coach, he'd come out and watch. He goes, it's the most, some of the best basketball, but nobody knows about it. You know, you wake up the next day and it's not even in the paper. You know, and what Larry's done is all the stuff around it, the TV package, the marketing of the team, how that, you know, you come up here and you see how the teams are outfitted, all the professionalism around it, much more interest with the radio, much more sponsorship, much more known overseas. When you're in the American Summer League, everybody's talking about the Australian League, the Australian players. What a great place. And look at it, our country is a place to live now when you look at the rest of the world. And the junior aspect of this is always been at a strong level. The coaching, the amount of kids playing, that's always been strong. So, you know, I keep referring to there is a difference. There's more players being produced. I think the teams are deeper than when I used to have 7-8 guys that were really strong, and then 3 or 4 that you were trying to build on, where now you've got major college Division I players that can't make your roster. You walk in and you see we're in a hotel right now with the Sydney Kings, and Melbourne's been here for 4 or 5 days, and the guys are built, they're in great shape, they're clean cut, they're well dressed, they're organized. I can see the other teams train, I can see them in the weight room, and I'm going, man, this thing's moved to another level. So, you know, the future is bright. I mean, everybody's dealing with COVID right now, and just the way the NBL's handled this situation, there's been a lot of criticism, but I think they've done a great job of moving everybody around, and for them to start this season under what's gone on and keep everybody together, again, I give them full credit.
Brian, the Next Stars program could be another great way for the sport to continue to grow in Australia. And I can't wait to see Justinian Jessop, the Boise State star, a magnificent three-point shooter who was taken in the second round by the Golden State Warriors, arguably the best franchise in the NBA. How excited are you to see Justinian, and what sort of progress do you think he'll make?
I think it's great. I mean, what a great idea. And again, what a great... just with LaMelo Ball last year and what he's doing now in the NBA highlights this program, and you know, I just, for us, getting Justin, Justinian, not only is he's an unbelievable, John Reilly, who's a famous Australian player here and was part of my national team in Athens, was the one that gave me the heads up on him. And he said, you're not only getting a great player, you're getting an unbelievable kid. And that's been the exciting part of it. You know, he's just, he's hardworking. He's here to get better. Again, he's a talent. You know, he's a real talent. He can really shoot the ball. He's good size. My team, when I go around this, and he falls in the same category, and I'm sure everybody will be able to see it over the course of the season, we're young. You know, you travel here, and a lot of guys have, you know, there's baby carriages and two kids and wives, and, you know, they're, you know, as the teams go around, and we're lean and young and, you know, mobile, you know, and, you know, most of the guys, you know, Max Darling, 19 years old, Frawling, 21, AK Gack, 18, you know, this kid's 23, Adele Dang's 23. That's what excites me. It feels like most of the viewers here won't maybe remember the names, but it was like when I started with the Magic with Frank Drimmick and Anstey and McKinnon and Jason Smith. I feel like I'm getting to redo that again. And this kid falls in that international prospect, NBA prospect. And I think everybody's going to enjoy watching him play. And, you know, he's a wonderful kid and a wonderful person. You know, it's going to be really good for the league.
And it's going to be great to see these potential NBA players play in the NBL in years to come. And also, and I think probably equally as importantly, a great way for our local talent to play in the NBL before going overseas. Andrew Bogut said recently in his podcast that you were just instrumental in getting him to stay the course. He was eager to get to the NBL, but you said, no, be patient, do it the right way, finish your AIS, then go to college basketball, and then you'll make it to the NBA. So you obviously saw something very early with Andrew, and he speaks glowingly about the fact you kept him on the right track and watered down his over-enthusiasm.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I mean, that was such a tremendous story that, you know, I'll never forget this as long as I live, that, you know, there was the change from winter to summer. And so all the Institute kids, all the young kids were in Melbourne. And I told my brother, I go, invite them all to Sandringham and just target and get the ones, and let's get some of the good ones early in with us to work out so they'll have a link to us. And I remember I got the list back, and there was a 7-foot kid from Sandringham. And I look at it, and I go to my brother, he cannot be very good. And I go, I'm in Sandringham. We train at Tulip Street every day. There's only one player here, and it's David Barlow. If there's a 7-footer running around here and we haven't seen him, we're not very good at our job. So I was involved with the national team then, and I have some stuff in the morning, and I'm in a meeting, and I get a phone call, and my brother says, you got to get over to the court and see this. That kid you were talking about, I've never seen nothing like this before. So I grab my assistant national team, and we go over to Sandringham, and I take one look, and I go, oh, my God. And the next thing, he was in my house, and the assistant coach actually was the one that lined up the University of Utah for him. And, you know, we ended up getting him to the Institute, and, you know, the rest is history. But, you know, probably in my time, the best talent. And I knew mentally just the way he competed and how strong he was mentally, that this kid was going to be special. But he's probably the best talent I've ever walked into the gym and saw at that age.
And just a magnificent ambassador for Australian basketball as well. And you coached him at the Olympics. How special would it be to have him on your coaching staff at Tokyo 2021?
Well, however you say it, when I got the news that he wasn't going to play, and again, full class, you know, he gave me before the announcement, and I haven't seen Andrew. You got to remember, I've been overseas for 11 years, and he's been in the NBA. There hasn't been a whole lot of communication, and obviously there's the respect there both ways, and I'd just gotten the job, and he made the call to me before he made the announcement. And, you know, I just said, you know, take your time, have a few thoughts, and when I get to Melbourne, you and I will have a cup of coffee. But if we get those medals around our neck, you know, I don't would be right not having Andrew Bogut there. He's been the driving force for a long, long, long time.
That's a good point, isn't it? We had Graham Arnold on our show yesterday talking about the Oli Roos and how he expects them to win a medal. Is it the same with you blokes, that you will go in expecting to win a medal?
That's been, you know, me coming in new, and I've spoken, I've Zoomed the main group, and there's no doubt. It's not even a talking point anymore. Their being is to medal, and to gold medal. So I mean that was driven by them to me. Hey, if you're going to get involved in this, this is where it's headed, and this is what we're doing, or there's a problem. So these guys have been banging on that door for a while, and it's one more step. And this is it. You know, I keep referring to the word timing, but you've got a window. Mick Malthouse used to talk about it with Collingwood. You know, that window appears, and you better get it done in that time frame. And right now, the window for the Boomers is now.
Well, hopefully it can be the case, and we're confident the likes of Ben Simmons and Patty Mills will be on the court at the Olympics.
I've spoken often to Patty, it's almost like the Olympics and the Boomers are more important right now than his NBA season, which he's having for maybe the best season of his career. And you know, the feeling I get out of the Simmons camp is that he would love to play. You know, if all falls in place. I mean, it's a work in progress. And we're working through things now, but everybody in Australia would love to see him with the green and gold on. And you know, I know it's something that he would really want to do.
Brian, you're an absolute legend. We've loved having a chat to you today. Thank you very much. Best of luck against Brisbane tomorrow and all season with the Hawks.
Thank you so much. I can't wait.
RSN Summer Breakfast Club.